I'm Anita Annabelle, and this is The Good Chat.
No, I'm not like compliments.
I'm quietly, I'm loving it.
I love making friends. I don't know what to tell you.
I'm a psychic. This podcast is going to be a hit.
Little chit chat.
This is probably the best chat. No, that's why this is called The Good Chat. We get good chat, mate.
Hello and welcome to this very special episode of The Good Chat. I am your host, Anita Annabelle. On today's episode, I had the absolute fortune of speaking with actor, singer, and dancer Hugh Sheridan, who has just reprised their role as Ben Rafter on Back to the Rafters on Amazon Prime Video. To say we had the most magical time is an absolute understatement, and I'm pretty sure we forgot we were recording at some point, so I do apologize if you feel like you're just listening in on two friends having a yarn. In this chat, Hugh told the full story about how they saved a man from harming himself the day after Are You OK Day this year, how they too had a near-death experience due to depression in the aftermath of being cast in Hedwig, how Jessica Murray was relieved not to play Rachel Rafter, but why Georgina was the perfect person to recast her with. Hugh was so generous and vulnerable and shared stories from how they came out, including how their NIDA teacher actually told them not to publicise their sexuality or they'd never get work, and how being a student at the Australian Ballet and host of the Network 10 series I Will Survive led them to write and direct their very first feature film in 2022. Also, just a content warning, the very first 10 minutes of this episode discusses mental health and suicide and may be triggering to some listeners. Without further ado, please welcome the one and only Hugh Sheridan.
Thank you so much for coming on my podcast.
My pleasure.
I've been a big fan for so many years.
I just had my second Pfizer shot just like early this morning. I had Kyle and Jackie O, which was a disaster. And then...
Stop it. Why?
Well, it wasn't... It was just they... It was audio only. I should have known better. So I was just on my phone and I was ready to go to the hospital to get my Pfizer because I had to go straight after that. So I just like, I had a cap on and I was wearing like t-shirt and like just hoodie and tracksuit pants and like, you know, I was just like ready to go and do that.
Yeah.
And not like be on Kyle and Jackie O, you know, because they, you know, you never know what they're going to do with.
You never know what they're
going to
say.
Ask you.
Yeah.
And I was like, can you just give me a second? And I was trying to get it, switch it from my phone to this and trying to get changed at the same time. They were like, you've just got one song. And then suddenly we were on, but I was still muted on my phone. I unmuted it. And then it was just one of those strange interviews because it was just like, we were just talking, they just go all over the place and, Kyle, I don't know, he was talking about marriage or something, and then he said, oh, you just, some days you just feel like throwing yourself under a bus, and then immediately on Friday I saved this guy from doing just that, and it was this weird, but it was just, I don't know why I said it, but because I didn't, like I was like, oh, I probably shouldn't have said that, like I was like, but I was just trying to, I think because it was so fresh in my mind of going through this weird experience just on Friday that was totally out of the blue. And it took hours to like talk him off the edge, that I felt like, I was like, well, that's not a joke, you know, as in, but I didn't want to be like that. I was just like, well, ironically, actually someone was just about to do that the other day and I had to stop them. And like, he was quite serious. Like he hit the note and everything. And, you know, it was the day after Are You OK Day. And I saw him and I didn't feel right about it. So I went back to him and I started talking to him and then he burst into tears. And then I said, I said, I'm not leaving you no matter what, you know, you have to come with me. And anyway, it took about 5 hours, like 4.5 hours. But in that time, I managed to get one of his children's name. And then I was like quietly finding them on Instagram and like got them to come meet me. And anyway, it was a long thing, but anyway, I didn't tell him any of that, but I just sort of mentioned it and then they wanted to know more about it. And then I was like, We're supposed to be talking about rafters, and here I am talking about. And they were like, "You literally saved a guy's life," and I was like, "I know," and it's so funny because I always, one of my quotes is, "I'm like, we're not saving lives, people. Let's just shoot this." Like, why does everyone make this so intense?
I cannot believe that you saved someone's life on Friday. What the hell? That is amazing. You were right. You were in the right place at the right time, Hugh.
Well, that's what I said to him. I said, you were just in the right place at the right time. Because he kept saying, how did you know? Like, how did you know? And he was crying for a long time. He was just kept, because he was quite drunk as well, you know, at this point when I found him. And he was well-dressed, like businessman, and four children, very successful, a lot older than me. And he was really embarrassed. And I said, don't be embarrassed by it. It's like, please, like, everyone has been there. And I said, this is a really hard time. But I said, you're not, like, I don't know your story. I don't know anything. But I said, I lost my dad not that long ago. And now that I know that you have children, I said, there's no way I'm leaving you. Like, there's just no way. I'm not going to. And he was just like, and I was like, I bet you wish a truck came along 5 minutes before I did, because I said, I'm going to make your life really, really annoying. I was singing to him and telling him jokes and everything. And he just kept going, who are you? Like, he had no idea who I was. He messaged me the next day, and he was still sort of embarrassed by the whole thing, but he was mainly embarrassed that he didn't recognize me. He said, I'm actually a big fan. And he said, that's even worse. And I said, no. Like, I said, what luck. I said, you got a free show. Yeah. And you get to see another beautiful day. So anyway, we've stayed in touch. He's doing fine. But I was like, wow.
I cannot believe this happened to you. Did you know I'm actually a psychic medium?
Oh, wow. That's so cool.
You were so meant to be there to save him. Mm. That is like, yeah. You were pushed to do that. What, you weren't meant to go there, though. What was it? They're showing me that you weren't meant to be there. Where were you meant to be?
I wasn't meant to be there at all. I just, like, I had, it was just a series of times, but I also had, like, a, like, near-death experience for the same reason, like, for after that, all that Hedwig stuff happened.
Oh, yeah.
And that's, you know, when you've been there, I think, you know, like, if I had died, I wouldn't have been able to save his life. But if I hadn't been walking, like, everyone else wanted to take a car, I said, it's a beautiful night, let's just stroll. And the only reason that I'd even gone out is the first time I'd gone out since I've been in Brisbane. I just wrapped on the movie that I've been shooting up here that day. And one of the ladies working on the show, who'd become a very good friend of mine, had resigned that day, and I was a little bit worried about her, so I said, let's go out for dinner. And it was just this weird coincidence thing, and I just knew it was just meant to be. And in the end, he kept saying to me, like, how did you know? And I said, well, maybe you've just got lots of angels around you, or maybe it's this, or maybe it's that. And then I just, in the end, I put my hand on his leg, and I said, it just wasn't your time. I was like, it just wasn't your time. And I said, I was the person. I was talking to his son last night, and he was saying, it's taken me a little while to get to really let that sink in. And I said, to be honest, I think it's taken me a while too. But I said, when I look back at how much he didn't want me to help him and how resolute he was and how sad he was, I said, it's also kind of like, I can't think of anyone else that would be quite as persistent or as persuasive as I was in that situation. Like, when a stranger tells you that they want you to let them go, like, leave you alone and you do your own thing, and I feel sad and this is my thing, I think it does take, you know, because other people that I was with were a bit like, nah, like, just leave him. And I said, no, this is serious. But I think, you know, I just had this gut feeling that something bad was going to happen to him.
That's intuition, like, your intuition.
Compress it all. So then I was thrown when, like, When Kyle just threw that in, he was like, oh, you, sometimes you feel like throwing yourself in the bus. And this guy literally just went into a truck.
But Kyle is very spiritual. So he has a lot of psychics on his show, a lot.
Yeah, right.
And they always reach his dad and et cetera, et cetera. So he really believes in that stuff. So it was honestly almost like the angels were telling. It was almost like this story had to come out. So
maybe, yeah. And I do think that my dad has, like, been around me a lot. He's intervened a lot. So many things. I just know, you know. And straight after he passed away, the very next day, my brothers and sisters were in my apartment in Adelaide. I rented an apartment as Dad was getting really sick, and that was mainly so that, like, I could have a little bit of space, and I had my partner there. And
yeah, of course.
We were just sort of like, you know, I just needed, rather than staying at a family's house, like brother or sister, and I've got a big family, I'm 6 of 7, so.
Amazing.
But there they all are in my apartment the next day planning the funeral, and it was just like too soon for me. Like, it was like, wow, I was straight into that. And I just went outside and I was like having a wine or something, you know. Probably like midday, and I was like shaking. Seems a bit early, but the day after your dad dies, you're just like,
I think you're allowed to have a few.
I am not coping with this situation. And my sister came out and she said, Hugh, you have to be in here, you have to be part of this. And people were saying, like, what are you going to say? What are you going to sing? What are you going to? And I said, no. I said, I just need like a sign from Dad. I need to know that he's okay, or that he's with his parents where he needs to be. And my sister started crying. She said, what do you want? And I said, I want a rainbow. I want a double effing rainbow. And, like, stormed out. Because, you know, you're highly emotional. He passed away very late in the night. And, probably early that morning.
Early in the morning, yeah.
And so I'd hardly slept. I mean, none of us had. And then there we were the very next day. Going, like, it was already happening. And so I ran downstairs and to get away from everyone, and my phone was ringing like straight away. Everyone's trying to call me, like going, oh, you know, I'm assuming they're saying, oh, you shouldn't have let him go. And anyway, eventually, see, this is so funny. I'll tell you something in a minute, but there's a kookaburra that's just sitting on my balcony right now that has been sleeping on my balcony every day. I can show it to you.
Show me.
I will show you. But Kurt said, came down and he said, there's a double rainbow over the whole of Adelaide right now. Look at this kookaburra.
That is amazing.
It's sitting here.
Gorgeous is your view? Oh, you're in Bris Vegas, aren't you?
I'm in Bris Vegas and the kookaburra sleeps there. Look at it looking at you.
Oh, my
gosh. Looking at me.
Hello.
Has been sleeping on my balcony every night, which is highly unusual for in the city.
I wonder who that is.
Well, I think it's Dad, because we're talking about him, and there he is.
And did he just appear just then? The kookaburra.
The kookaburra just arrived just then.
Yeah, then you go. That is your dad it. Then.
But he's been there. He's been sleeping on the balcony every night, and he wakes me up some mornings when I'm supposed to have a sleep in, which is funny because most mornings when you're shooting, as you know, you start at like, you know, 4 a.m. or something like that. So the days when he like decides to go off at 4 a.m. randomly always makes me laugh. And wow. I thought, it's just Dad telling me to laugh.
It is. Yeah, kookaburra laugh. Oh, that song. And you probably sung that on play school a lot.
I definitely sung it on play school, and I definitely I remember loving singing that as well when I was
in
school in choir, because you know how they do it in a round? Like, kookaburra sits in
the. Yeah. Oh, I loved it.
And I always loved that. So
we're the same age, so we both did that. Like, that was something that was very much a 90s kid.
It's very 90s. Isn't it? Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Sydney, in the North Shore of Sydney.
Oh, so we had lots of kookaburras.
We had so many kookaburras. In fact, when my grandfather passed away, that's what You make me all emotional. When my grandfather passed away, I was 6 years old, and he was like my favorite human in the entire world.
Yeah.
And they were all the kookaburras, and our next door neighbor who was looking after my sister and I said to us, that's your grandfather laughing. So it's really weird that you're saying that.
Mm, I know. I love signs, and I always believe in signs.
Isn't that
signs,
amazing? Well, you should. But let's talk about Back to the Rafters, even though I could just listen to you talk, tell me your stories all day long. This is such a special show.
You know, the Rafters was, we were shooting that like basically, I mean, really like a couple of years ago started, I think. Was it last, like, gosh, it seems so weird. It was last year, but we had to stop and start, but it would have come out last year.
Really?
If we didn't have to stop for COVID.
COVID, yeah.
Feels like it was 2 years ago, but it really wasn't. And then there's just been... It's been delayed, like it would have come out earlier this year, but, you know, the funny thing is, like we were saying before, timing, I think, is everything. And I really think that Rafters was made for Australians, and it was a show that resonated with all of us. Like I loved the show and I was in it, but I loved it, I think, so much because, you know, back in the early days, like I remember, like, Ben met Mel in the first episode. Like, that's when they first met. And then we went through that whole journey, like, a series of them dating, a series of them being engaged, getting married, a series of them trying to have a baby, and then her death. And to go through that journey with a character that you've created and characters that we'd created and a real relationship that we'd created, you know, to us it was very – we were – living it. We were doing 22 episodes a year or more, so because they would go series back to back because everyone just loved it so much they needed to get it done and wanted to keep going. And it was just like I'm so attached to the character. He's like, Ben's a part of who I am now. And so it took you know, there'd been talk about it coming back in the past, but I certainly wasn't ready. And I think a lot of, like, I think other actors in the show weren't ready either. We were doing other things and it seemed a bit premature and, you know, I hadn't been gone long enough. But now it's literally been 8 years since it's been on the screen. So 8 years have passed. It's been, for Ben, like in the last two series, I was only in the final episodes. So Ben is like nearly 10 years on properly from when people are really getting to know him again. And a lot's changed, but I'm still exactly the same character. And that's what I loved about coming back to it, because it's sort of like coming home after being away for a really long time and just remembering him and feeling his responses to everything, you know, because you get in that mindset as an actor, like, it's not how would I respond, but how would Ben respond, and how would this situation affect him, and all of that sort of thing. And then just putting together all these beautiful actors for Back to the Rafters, it's and I just think Australia needs it right now. You know,
totally.
Really glad that Amazon Prime Video like really pushed for this to happen. It's amazing.
It's one of those shows that I think, you know, it's so wholesome, and you need something that's wholesome and loving, and the family who's going through it like we all do. I think that's why people need it right now.
It made me very nostalgic.
And we have a new Rachel this year, which is, and I can understand for the cast, it's a bit bittersweet. How did the dynamic change on set having Georgina Haig step into the role?
You know what? It was, I guess it was like pretty well-timed, the COVID break, because Jess was, you know, was involved and then sort of stepped away, which I fully understand. But she and I are very close, as you know, and gone to drama school together, and we're besties in real life. So that was really good because I got to spend a lot of time with her. She came and lived with me in Bronte for a bit of COVID, like when we were in lockdown because she was by herself. And we just had a real laugh, and she was, you know, relieved about that. And I was curious as to how that might change with Georgina Hay coming on, but she really was like, and I've had to say to her so many times and everyone in the show, not because she would, I think she felt tentative and knew that this was a big show and that Rachel was a very loved character, but she really is like the most perfect person to replace. She really was like the right person to step into this. Like she, like I didn't realize. Do you know what's so funny is that she and I had actually worked together and we didn't remember. Like we had done the In Excess movie years ago.
Oh yeah, Never Tear Us Apart. Yeah.
Yeah, and we had both been on it, and we sort of just kept looking at each other and going like, "You're so familiar to me." And I'm doing like the head, like the kookaburra out on my balcony. It's going like that. Keeps looking at us. Thing is, Georgina and I are like, we are like getting each other's phone numbers. And then I said, I'll text you. And then I was like, oh, I already have your number. And then all, you know how iPhones store text messages.
Or the text message chain.
We text, we potentially made out. she like works that out. I was like, oh my gosh, like where and like really? And anyway, now we're playing brother and sister, and that was a long time ago, so don't even worry about it. But I mean, Jess and I had played husband and wife and boyfriend and girlfriend at NIDA, so we had already done that as well. So that would always weird people out, so we just steered away from it. Yeah.
That was the best story.
Potentially did. Well, we did, but I was just hoping that Amazon don't listen to this. I'm sure they will. But that's okay.
They will. That's fine. What I don't understand is how she did not recognize you, remember working with you. Like, I know Georgina's very, very
proud. I know, right?
But hello, it's Hugh Sheridan.
I can't wait to tell her that. That is a very good, very good comment. I'm going to be like, I can totally understand me not remember working with you, but you forgot me?
She's very, very prominent in her own right, but also how did she forget working with you? I don't understand.
I have no idea.
No, I'm going to dig up. You're still looking at the kookaburra, God, aren't you?
The kookaburra is now being very naughty. If anything is like, if you're getting one thing, my life is a bit crazy. Strange things happen all the time.
It's made me feel, it's not at all what I expected from you.
Yeah.
Like, I think in my head I was like, but you know people that I know that I know that you would, like, that I get along really well with, so I know that you must be really, really cool. But then I
people
was like.
People are a lot smoother than I am, but I just, like, when I've got a kookaburra on the table smashing things up while I'm trying to do a podcast. Wouldn't you be in chaos as well?
Oh, always. I'm always in chaos. I'm actually acting really cool right now, but I'm a little bit like excited to talk to you.
when will this go to air?
On next Wednesday. Right. I put Billy out today. Billy, Mark Billingham from SAS out today.
Oh, okay. SAS. They've asked me to do SAS. Can you imagine? Oh, cut that out.
I was going like, to ask you, would you do it?
No. Hell no. I'm claustrophobic for starters, and also if I wanted to join the army, I would have.
Yeah,
but instead
point.
I went to the Australian Ballet School and to NIDA, and I entertain people as a living.
I want to talk about the Australian Ballet School. My mum was a ballerina.
And really?
Yeah, she was for 30-something years. She was a ballerina.
With the Aussie Ballet?
She wasn't with the Australian Ballet Company, but she did touring ballet around the country, and she also had her own dance school in Melbourne. It's called the Mercedes Lyons Dance School or something, but she also worked at Johnny Young Talent School, and she taught Kathleen DeLeon.
I would love your mum.
My mum would eat you up.
All right, perfect, in a good way.
Oh, she adores you. So she's very, very thrilled that I'm chatting to you today. But she was like, please make sure you ask you about being in the Australian Ballet. So here, this is for Mum.
The Australian Ballet School was like this random thing, really, because I grew up, I always sang because my dad was a singer. Mm. And I started acting when I was really little and I just loved it. And I knew from a very young age that I wanted to be an actor. And then, but I also loved, dad used to show me all those old MGM movies. Like he loved Frank Sinatra and so did I. And so Gene Kelly and Fred Astaire and everything. And I was really into it. Like, you know, other kids were into like collecting cards and stuff and footy cards. And I was into like MGM. Like, but I would get books on them and read about them. They were all really good dancers. That was, and I was really bad. So I thought I'll work on that the harder. So I actually changed schools because my school wouldn't let me do dancing because it clashed with footy. And I was like, nah. And then when I like left, all my friends were like, no, you fag and all this stuff. And I was like, so while I'm lifting girls in next to nothing, you were like tackling guys in next to nothing. So you did that. Anyway, point is, that was my defense as a, you know, 12-year-old, 13. No, actually, I was 14 when I started dancing.
Good defense,
when I
actually
started. Yeah, it was a good comeback in the 90s.
Yeah.
and then I ended up auditioning for the Australian Ballet School after I'd done a year of full-time dance. And that was, I got in more on like my physicality and musicality, I think, because I still wasn't very good. But then I got there and then they taught, there's such a thorough technique. And I could never work out why I went to the Australian Ballet School. Like I was like, what was the point in me going there? Because I hadn't really used it. And quite a few years ago, I got cast in this remake of Dirty Dancing, which Kenny Ortega was going to be doing. And at the same time, I'd agreed to do something that I wasn't as keen on doing for Channel 10, and it clashed. And Channel 10 threatened through Lionsgate. Look, it happened years ago. I don't really care if this story gets out.
Is this I Will Survive?
Maybe. and it could have been. It could have been so.
Oh, that thing. That thing. Show on that network that is...
Yeah. That around. I'm not confirming or denying whether that was the one. But anyway, they never ended up making that Dirty Dancing anyway, because I think mainly because I pulled out so late. We didn't realise that there was a clash until we got the deal memo. Anyway, I thought that that was the reason that I was going to do it. But here's the cool part. So then while I was working on... All right, I Will Survive. While I was working on it, I came back. I became friends with some of the crew. And when I came back to Sydney, I went to one of the crews. His dad owned a pub, and there was a young guy working on it who was a carpenter. And he was in a pretty low place in his life. And he'd made a few mistakes, and he was only much younger than me. And like, you know, he was probably 18, 19, and I was probably like 25, 26 or something, but you know, it feels different at that age. And he said, I really want to get into acting. I feel like I'm stuck. And so I said, well, that's okay, I'll mentor you, because I mentored a couple of other friends and I put them together and got them to like go to classes together, and I enjoy that. And he ended up coming to LA, staying on my couch, and like he was really getting into it. And then he sort of disappeared for a while, and I hadn't heard from him. And it turned out he'd come back to Australia. He met this beautiful Indigenous artist who he's now married to her, and they have children. And he's a film producer. And he said to me, probably the end of, not last year, but like the end of 2019, he said, do you have any ideas for a film? And I said, I do have this idea for a film, which I ended up writing. When COVID happened, I sat down and I wrote it, and it's called The Dance. And it's about that time in my life when I was at the Australian Ballet School. And I went, oh, I wasn't supposed to do Dirty Dancing. I didn't go to the Australian Ballet School to do Dirty Dancing. I went there so that I would do I Will Survive and then meet this guy Blake, change his life, and then he in turn is changing my life by giving me my directorial debut. So we'll have to get your mum in it somehow. She'll just have to be like one of the teachers or something.
Oh my God.
Like, so that's she a little died. Full circle moment for you there. But it's a true story. Like I met him and got him out of this situation and got him into the industry, and now he's killing it as a producer, and he's subsequently producing my directorial debut.
That is so exciting. When's that happening?
It's happening the second half of next year. So we're going to be shooting it in between Melbourne and Adelaide, because obviously the ballet school is set in Melbourne. Even if it's not called the Australian Ballet School, if we don't get permission from them. But I think they'll be fine with it. You know, it's still set in 2003, and a lot of things have changed since then about what you can and can't say to a student. But I want it to be authentic, because I think, well, your mum will love this. Like, I think ballet dancers are just so underrated in Australia as an art form. I mean, the arts is also underrated, but in America and Russia and Europe and so many other parts of the world, ballet dancers are really well-respected superstars and athletes, because they work so hard and they have such a short career. They're really considered athletes, you know, and you are an athlete as a dancer. So I want to show that it's the same sort of life sacrifice that young people give up to go into the world of dance. But the difference between, I guess sports is difficult as well, but ballet can be very, very difficult, because you're there at this vulnerable age and you're just staring in a mirror and constantly
picking yourself apart.
What's wrong with yourself? Like what you don't like about yourself, and you're striving for in an art form that's striving for perfection, when we know that everyone is already perfect. It's about finding like the perfection within yourself. So that's sort of what this film is about and explores, and I can't wait to make it.
So when you played Ben the first time, you weren't authentically who you were at the time. You weren't out, you know, in a way in public.
No, not really at all. Mm. I mean, well, at times I was, because the thing is I was dating, I dated both at the time, but I still wasn't authentic. Like, but the thing is, like, there is so much of myself that I brought to Ben, and I think that's why people resonated with it, because I made it okay for him to be sensitive and to be very vulnerable and very eager to be honest. Mm-hmm. And he really loves his family, and he really wants the truth. He really has a big, big heart. He would do anything. And like all of these things, like, you know, it was some of me, some of people that I knew, some people that I admired, like my family and like my brothers. I took the best of those people and brought it to him. Like, who a character's dating is rarely a matchup with, a person's real life ever. So it's weird that we're going into an age where people are sort of saying like, oh, but you should be this if you're going to play that, because that's not why we go to drama school. Like, most actors that you see in film and television have gone to a drama school, can sing and can dance, and a lot of the time they're playing serial killers or people that are like, you know, have like, you know, that like work in offices and stuff. Like, so you've got to remember, every person that you see on television is rarely who they are in real life, like when they're playing character. The difference comes into like celebrities, and obviously you have to do interviews and things like this. And early on, I never ever was like personally attracted to guys until I was older. And maybe like there was even a part of me that wished that I was, because I was always teased for it at school, and that, but I was you know, I just was in love with this, with a girl, actually. I'm not going to get into it because we're still friends and I don't want to talk about it. we don't talk about that. But it's embarrassing. But later when I did, I was at NIDA and I met this guy that I liked. And I told everyone because I was really excited. I was like, oh, my God, this is brilliant. And as soon as I did, these teachers told me, like, took me into a room and said, you can't tell anyone that because if you do, you're not going to get employed. And my response to that was actually to go the opposite. We had to do this thing called a movement piece where I was, like, so angry with them. Like, I was more out and louder and prouder than anyone. And I tore apart these curtains in the back of the studio that were hidden the whole time. And I was doing Swan Lake, like, there's the black swan and the white swan because the movement piece is supposed to be on your life. And because I'd been to the Australian Ballet School, I used that and I was doing the arms and everything and then tore apart these curtains. And behind it, it said campaign against moral persecution, big, like, red, like, blood red. And I had every country that it was still illegal and had, like, the death penalty for people being gay. And the whole of this massive studio was covered. And people were just like shocked because they were like, really, is there that many countries? They're like, yeah. But then the shitty thing that happened after that was that that person broke my heart, and then I decided that I didn't like guys at all and I went back to girls. So I was very confused and I didn't know what to say. And then Rafters happened and the publicist said, do you want to talk about it? And I said, you know what, I don't, mainly because I don't know who I am yet anyway. And if I make a choice, it'll just stick with me. Oh. And it's sort of taken me years and years to realize that while I felt that not talking about my private life was sort of like me empowering myself to my rights for privacy, which I think everyone should have, at the same time I was starting to feel a little bit trapped, but maybe like you, where I was going, well, I needed get like on a dating app and I'm gonna have to say either like I want everyone.
What am I?
And then I'm gonna be like Shane warned. I'm gonna be like Shane warned with like girls and guys coming out of the woodwork and they're going, he's just selfish. And he just wants the whole smorgasbord. And you know what? Now as I'm older, there's been times as I've gotten older where I've gone, actually it's kind of a blessing, I guess, being whatever they want to call it these days. There's so many different labels.
Yeah.
There's so many different versions of saying what we used to only have as bisexual. But the thing is, the reason I called my show at the Brisbane Festival and the Adelaide Human Festival this year Human, and is because I feel like my personal feeling, and a lot of people don't like it, but is that labels separate us, whether you're single or married or divorced, whether you're Muslim, Catholic, Jewish, black,
totally
white,
us.
Gay, straight, trans, polyamorous. Like, we're all humans before we're male and female.
Yeah.
We're already humans. We don't have a different name for, like, female or male humans. Humans is the species. So I'm like, if we as, because we created that, humans created that because we're so clever and we created so many other wonderful labels like king and queen and president and all this sort of thing. And we created homeless and we created disabled and all these other labels that we give to people and that we're taught at young ages. Even to like toilets and stuff like that, and genders and colors that we are allowed to like and not allowed to like, and toys that we're allowed to play with and aren't allowed to play with. And I feel like labels separate you from me. But if I just look at you and go, you're a human, then you're just exactly the same as me.
Absolutely.
Despite everything, I don't see it. It's not like, because we are the same. I mean, totally. I'm sure you and I are very similar on many levels anyway, but I mean,
so many levels.
But at the end of the day, it's all about just to like understanding that that everyone cries the same and everyone feels the same. It's even like me meeting that guy the other night. Like, the only way I could really connect to him was by saying, I know how you feel. Whether I know your circumstance or not, I know how much you're hurting, and I know that I can help if you just let me try. You know what I mean? Because I didn't see him as being an older man than me, or like a someone that was in a different position, or like a drunk, or this or that, or that, you know, someone that I was with said, oh, he's probably cheated on his wife or something. And I thought, no, you know,
no,
we don't
judgment.
Know that.
Yeah.
No judgment. And it wasn't that case at all. He had not done that. In the end, I found out that it was like, it was not that. He was in a very different situation. It was heartbreak. He had a broken heart. And so, but anyway, he's fine now.
So you said that you were really vulnerable after Hedwig, and that was not. I mean, I get the uproar. I don't understand a lot of what happened, and I didn't think it was very fair to you.
It was very hard for me to understand what was happening as well. Like, I couldn't. I realized at that point, like you said, before, when you were talking about Ben Rafter and sort of not like coming across as your authentic self, it's like there's I used to joke and say I'm typecast as like a character that I'm not. Like, everybody, like, people keep like going, oh, Hugh would be great for that role, you know. Like, he's a footballer and he's, you know, he's got, you know, 5 bedrooms, got 2 misses. He's like,
I love that show, by the way.
Yeah. Well, literally, before that, they were looking at me for another role, which was even closer to Ben Rafter. And I was like, I wanted to play Lockie because at least he was a bit of a dick. And I liked that George Costanza sort of opportunity to play a character like that. But it's more that I was laughing, thinking like, but like, I'm getting cast as these guys that are like, sure, whatever, which is fine, but that's because I'm an actor and I can play that. But I also wanted to play other roles that were like different, and Hedwig was definitely a role that I resonated with, because I don't think anyone should ever be denied their self-expression, no matter whether they're an actor or a human or anything. Mm. Like, that's like an actor or a human. Actors are humans too.
Actors are humans too.
No, I mean, and whether they're an actor, a doctor, whether you're married, whether you're single, whether you're gay, whether you're straight, whatever you identify as, like, you know, I don't think anyone should be denied, you know, whatever it is, whether it's they want to try singing or they want to take up, you know, millinery or whatever it is. Do what you love.
Yeah.
Or like in Caitlyn Jenner's situation, eventually decided to transition. But I was denied that self-expression. That's what I felt like, as in I wasn't even allowed to explore that because other people said, well, you're not trans and you're not that, and I am, and therefore I have more say over you. But I said, my thing was like, well, I don't know if I am. I don't know. I don't know. I don't even, but I didn't, no one asked me. And also, I'm not saying that I am or I'm not, but I'm like, how could you say to someone, say like you're looking for a boyfriend or something, and then you say, but I'm thinking maybe I might try a girlfriend. I don't know. Would like another girl who's like, says I've been dating girls for years and you've only been dating guys, so you're not allowed to try that.
Yeah.
Sorry, it's too late for you. That's sort of where I was feeling a little bit like, this is really unfair, because also they didn't know that I am not Ben Rafter. I am Hugh. You know, I did go to the Australian Ballet School. I did train how to sing, and I have worked for 17 years in the industry, and that role is still a very, very intimidating one-man show, one-human show,
human
I should say, for anyone. And I had dinner with the writer and creative finally just on Saturday night, this last Saturday.
Huh.
The night after I saved the guy's life.
Then oh my God, your life.
The very next night, I'm sitting there with John Cameron Mitchell, and I was close to, I was close to playing one of his husbands in Tiger King, which would have been hilarious. And I'm not going to say which one because I don't want to say that. But we were talking about it, and I was actually in the States, and it just the timing didn't work. So anyway, but it went to whoever the right actor was to play that.
Mm.
And I don't know who that is. But we were laughing about that, and it was so good to finally meet him. And he was saying, they're saying that I'm not even allowed to play the role anymore. And I'm just like, but you wrote it. And he said, yeah, and I definitely did not write it like to be, he said he wrote the role for anyone that can play it. And
didn't Neil Patrick Harris originate that role?
Yeah, it's only been played by one trans person in history, and it's also been played by a woman. It's been played only by like men, some who were gay, some who were straight, some like, I mean, that tradition, it's just you have to have what you need to play that role is to be able to walk in heels. You have to be able to very convincingly play 8 different characters, one of which is a black man, one is a mother, one is a child, one is a boyfriend, one is a husband, one is someone pre and post op, and they regret it. And
right, okay.
So it wasn't a one man show just about a trans person. It was a one man show about a whole period of time during the Cold War. It just happens to be named after
Hedwig,
which was the name of the mother of the boy who transitioned, and he steals her passport. And anyway, then he becomes a they, them, she, whatever. So a lot of people didn't have all the information, and I think that you can't support cancel culture and support mental health at the same time. You just can't. Like, it's just, they don't go hand in hand, and I think people are starting to realize that more and more, that like cancel culture is just becoming like another form of trolling that's okayed, and
absolutely
it was so misplaced in that time. So many of my friends who are trans like were coming out and sticking up for me, and then getting attacked, and they're saying, I don't know what you think, but you do not know who this person is.
Mm.
You don't know Hugh Sheridan. You do not know. Not know him on a personal level at all, because you would not be saying this, because I guarantee you he can walk better in heels than you. He went to the Australian Ballet School.
Yeah, and you were in
has
points
got
and
a lot of experience in dress-ups, because it's one of the things that I do very well. You can ask Darren McMullen about Friday night.
I would love to ask Darren McMullen about Friday
Actually, it was Saturday night. It was after I'd had dinner with, finally had dinner with John Cameron Mitchell, and as I was walking out, I ran into Darren and Millie, and they were with a very fabulous Australian character, Baz, and I said, "Oh, Baz." I said, "You remember?"
Are you talking about Baz Luhrmann?
Yeah. It was a weird night. It was a very, very weird night. And they were supposed to be having dinner with my partner, Kurt. And I said, "Where's Kurt?" And they said, "He bailed on us." And so we're with Baz. And so I called Kurt, and he went down and had dinner, and I went and joined them. And
what is your life?
Oh, mate, it has been a roller coaster of craziness, but we've had a lot of laughs and a lot of tears.
Are you living in Brisbane now, or are you coming back to Sydney?
I'm living in Brisbane for the rest of my life.
For the rest of your life? That's a huge statement.
Yeah, I've just fallen in love with that. No, I'm not. I still live in Los Angeles. All my stuff is there.
Yeah.
All my things are there. My cat is there. I miss her terribly. I want to go home. It's just not that easy anymore. I just really hate quarantine. I'm fully vaccinated. Like I told you, I got my second Pfizer today. I also got the J&J when I was in America, but the Australian government sort of Medicare thing wouldn't recognize it yet, so I had to get another vax. So now I'm
Oh my God, you're like triple vaxxed.
Well, it's the equivalent of having like a booster shot, which Australians will get eventually.
Oh, okay.
Once when, yeah, you'll get around to hearing about that. That's right. In America, they're already doing them, so I was sort of like, I wasn't too worried about the whole, you know, like people were like, but are you gonna die? And I'm like, I don't think so. Like, I mean, if I cark it right now, you'll be the first to know. But I was like, I was
yes,
like
an I arm love a grows headline. Out of my head.
I wanted the Bill Gates one. I wanted the
What's the Bill Gates one?
Like the microchip one that they're all talking about with it. I was like, the magnets just fall off.
Do you know what though? I already hear people talking to me being a psychic medium. So I'm like, you know, it'll just be the exact same thing if the government are talking to me. 5G, baby.
Oh, yeah. I said, well, I know it was more about I wanted him to know where I was in case anything went wrong.
Oh, in case you got kidnapped or something.
Yeah, or just like, you know, in case he gets bored, like he could have been listening to this entire conversation. I'm sure he's got nothing better to do. And he's probably really.
Just listening to the good chat.
I'd say he'd be sitting there right now thinking, you know what? I think he's onto something. I think we label too much. And I think that we're becoming a little bit like separated instead of coming together at a time where we should really be looking for similarities rather than differences.
And he'll create an app for that or something.
He will, probably, and, yeah. He and probably you know, just gave him a really good idea.
Yeah, you've probably just given him a great idea and now that's it. And now you're going to be poor and he's going to be extra wealthy more.
Or he'll like work out like a man. Oh, I think he's calling me. Hold on. I can feel something's going
still
off
feel
in my
something
body.
In your arm. It's like tickling.
Oh, hold on. I'm getting some information. It's a download. I'm getting a download.
It's downloading. I don't know whether to be offended because that's how I get download messages. I'm like, hang on a sec.
No, I really do actually know what you're talking about.
I know. Like, you're intuitive.
I haven't told anyone, but I've never really let go out of the bag about that. But when I was 16, I got chosen by this woman, and I'm the only person she's taught. I read Brishkala cards. Like I could give you a reading off a deck of playing cards, like hearts, diamonds.
See, I can't do that. I can read energy, but I can't read off cards. They block
me. That's how she taught me, but not off tarot cards, off the original ones, which is the Italian playing cards, Brishkala. So it's like coins became diamonds, chalice became hearts, spades were swords, and clubs remained clubs, but they were a different kind of clubs. They're the cards that Marco Polo brought back from China, like way back, and that's when gypsies started and all that sort of
thing. Oh, my God. That's so cool.
I know. So I'm really random. Like, and I used to give readings like
twins?
All the time.
I feel like we're really similar. May 27.
Oh, I'm June the 30th.
So. Yeah. Well, Mum, so it's my mum's birthday.
Really? Oh, that's weird.
That's amazing. Yeah, she's like chuffed by you, honestly.
Your mum's a cancer.
Oh my God, you would love her. She's just the most incredible woman. She's like so loving and she's like more excitable than me. She's just the best. She'd be thrilled to be here, honestly. She's just at work at the moment, so I'll definitely call her and say tell her all the wonderful things.
What's her name?
Her name's Mercedes.
Mercedes. I knew that, sorry.
Mercedes.
Mercedes
Paula Ann Esteban, Spanish.
Oh, Espanol.
And she also loves George.
From Barcelona?
No, she's actually born in the Philippines. Born in the Philippines.
But she's got a lisp.
No, it is. It's like the Catalan, yeah. The Barcelona. But we just joke. We call her Mercedes.
Yeah. She bangs her pants every night.
She's actually the most, she's very Aussie. But, George and Mum love George because Mum lived in North Sydney. We lived together, and that's how she knows George. So she knows all the Piatto boys. She
I love
them.
George. I love the restaurant. I just love his
how good's Piatto? Oh my God, I know. Oh,
you said Piatto. You said Piatto, and they say Piatto.
Piatto. Yeah.
Yeah. At Piatto restaurant, George speaking.
Oh my God, that sounds exactly.
And then he's like. No, it's not Carbo. Hangs up.
Sounds exactly. Anyway, Anyway, okay. Thank you so much for being on my podcast.
It has been my biggest pleasure ever. I loved it so much. And I'm honestly, so happy that I can just see your facials. You're so gorgeous. You're just beautiful.
Oh, thank you.
Hello.
Well, that was such a good chat. You can catch Hugh Sheridan and the rest of the Rafters cast on Back to the Rafters, streaming now on Amazon Prime.
And if you like this chat, you can rate, follow and review and follow me on Instagram at @AnitaAnnabelle_ and @TheGoodChatPod. See you next week.